In the giving tree, we see a grateful and appreciative boy grow into an entirely age-appropriate, self-centered teen. But there he stops maturing. He gets older, but he stops growing. He remains that same self-centered person until we see him last, an old man sitting on what remains of his lifelong friend. I think that one can draw parallels in this story to the story of humankind. In my own experience, I had an awakening, as did Andrew, about that same age. I think I was 8. And behind my house were about 40 acres of fallow farmland. Been fallow for probably 30 years. And I used to regularly roam that 40 acres, doing things that boys do, creating havoc, dreaming a space away from the bullies at school. There was a place within that 40 acres that I liked to think was a place that only I knew. It was under some bushes, kind of hidden. I used to go there to contemplate. I'd lie on my back looking up at the bushes overhead. Sometimes there'd be songbirds there. I remember once holding a conversation with a blackbird. She would whistle her song. I'd whistle it back to her. We went on for 10 or 15 minutes this way, and I liked to think that there was some communication happening. And then one day, I came home from school, and that 40 acres was bare earth. It had been raised for a housing development. And I practiced my one and only act of environmental terrorism by pulling out surveying flags. I was hurt and enraged, and I became an environmentalist that day. And I have lived most of my life as an environmentalist, except for those years when I was in the military, in the Navy, as a jet fighter pilot, and I succumbed to that siren song of speed and danger and glory and expensive toys. In 1984, I bought a brand new Corvette, knowing that that would make me happy. During the Axial Age, between 800 to 200 before Common Era, new and parallel thinking in philosophy and religion developed independently in Persia, India, China, and the West. Prior to this, earth-centered religions dominated the spiritual landscape. The cosmos were a great source of wonder and mystery, but earth was what sustained us. She was worshipped. Her cycles of seasons were revered and celebrated. Our forebears' relationship with Earth was that of the young boy with the giving tree. And humankind grew older. I first wrote matured, but that's not really what we did. We grew older. Our numbers increased. Our demands of the Earth grew greater. In the dominant religion of the West, Christianity, The idea that paradise was here on earth was replaced by the belief in a second coming of Christ, an end of days of heaven. We cherry-picked scripture from the Bible to support our pillaging of Mother Earth. When our numbers were fewer and our mechanical and engineering and biological skills were less powerful, Earth could still withstand our onslaught. Sure, there were extinctions likely caused by our younger species, notably the giant vertebrates of Australia, the giant flightless birds of New Zealand, and the megafauna of this continent, of which the dire wolf and the saber-toothed cat are two well-known examples. But to a large degree, Earth was still resilient. Her apples were being picked by that teen, but most of them came back year after year in seemingly never-ending cycles of renewal. And now the boy of our story has entered young manhood. He needs a house. And in the late 18th century, the industrial age began in England and Scotland. The population of the earth approached 1 billion. Not coincidentally, Adam Smith rewrote economic theory, setting the stage for consumerism, that out-of-control juggernaut that now rules the world. Our boy cuts off the branches of his tree. Humankind clear-cuts many of the great forests of the temperate world to build ships and houses and factories. We begin our love affair with non-renewable carbon fuels. We are told and we begin to believe that labor-saving devices and more stuff will make us happy. So thinks the boy, so say the advertisers. Fast forward to present day. In 2011, the world population passed the 7 billion mark. 7 billion. It took us 50,000 years to reach our first billion, but only 12 years to grow from 6 billion to 7. Our climate is changing before our eyes. Oceans are rising and acidifying, increasing flooding and destroying coral reefs and commercial oyster beds. The sixth great extinction is underway. Our middle-aged man of our story has cut down the trunk of his tree to build a boat to escape his own spiritual malaise. Is that where we are? It is easy for me to go here, to this place of despair, but I choose not to. Earth is close to an ecological disaster, but I choose to hope. Here is what I think that we can do to avert cutting down the tree that sustains us. Every year since 1984, the World Watch Institute has published State of the World, a highly regarded and authoritative look at the state of our Earth. The 2012 edition is subtitled Moving Towards Sustainable Prosperity. It is intended to promote discussion on this issue leading up to the Rio Plus 20 UN Earth Summit Conference in Rio de Janeiro later this year. This will be the 20th anniversary of the first Earth Summit. The chapters in this year's edition include such titles as Reinventing the Corporation. Couldn't we use that? Moving Towards Sustainable Transport, and Food Security and Equity in a Climate-Constrained World. Interesting subjects, all for me, at least, but not the ones I have looked at the brief time I have owned the book. I chose to start with population. State of the World offers 9 strategies to stop short of 9 billion. The market which some population scientists believe world population will level off based on current trends. The assumption by the author of that chapter is that fewer than 9 billion is a good thing. Less stressful to the environment and to human populations. I agree. Of the 9 strategies offered, the first 2 are most critical. 2 aspects of women's rights have been shown time and time again to have huge impacts on birth rates. First, women worldwide choose to have fewer children when offered access to reproductive choice. Birth rates decline drastically. Second, as women become better educated, birth rates go down. There are, of course, numerous obstacles to reproductive choice and better education. These include culture and religion, to name 2 big impediments in many parts of the world. And no minor obstacle is the off-again, on-again nature of U.S. policy with regard to reproductive education and funding overseas. I think our first and second principles apply here in their affirmation of inherent worth and dignity and for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. There are many organizations working in these 2 arenas. Support them. We can support them. Loss of biodiversity is something near to my heart. I was initially trained as a biologist, and I have followed this issue for years. Unfortunately, biodiversity is well below the radar for most people and for most politicians worldwide. Prior to present day, there have been 5 great mass extinctions, of which the loss of the dinosaurs is the most recent and most well known. Scientists think we are now in the beginnings of a 6th great mass extinction. Extinction rates for species worldwide are 1,000 times the background rate, the rate at which species have historically become extinct. The difference is due to human causes, including climate change, habitat loss, introduction of exotic species, and excessive resource harvesting. From a strictly utilitarian point of view, biodiversity is necessary for the functioning of the ecosystems upon which humans depend and or which enrich our lives. Healthy ecosystems are resilient. Unhealthy ecosystems are not, and most of the ecosystems in the world are severely stressed, meaning stresses like climate change are more dangerous, are more likely to lead to the collapse of that ecosystem. Much of the battle against loss of biodiversity must take place in the public policy arena, both here in the United States and in the world. For the policy wonks and political activists among you, and I know there are at least a few of you, direct your attention here. Apply pressure. Make this part of our political discussion. At a deeper level, loss of biodiversity saddens me both personally and theologically. I have rewritten our first principle for myself to read, "We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of all living things." Our 6th principle reads, "We respect the 7th principle, we respect in the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part." We live our principles by doing what we can do. For all of us, the choices we make about how we live, how we travel, how much we purchase, what we purchase, and what we eat make a difference. There are websites where you can determine your carbon footprint. A smaller footprint affects Earth health in a variety of ways, including biodiversity. Many of the world fisheries are being over-harvested. The Monterey Bay Aquarium website publishes a downloadable app to your little pocket computer that provides a list of recommended and not recommended seafood choices. Ask your favorite restaurants to stop carrying unsustainable food choices. Population growth, loss of biodiversity, and consumerism, my third area of discussion, are interrelated. You've heard statistics similar to these before, but I'll repeat them. With only 16% of the world's population, the 65 highest income countries account for 78% of the money spent by consumers worldwide. 16% of the population, 78% of the money spent. As countries like China and Brazil create middle classes, they desire to emulate the consumptive habits of people like us. Imagine. Yet, study after study has concluded that sense of well-being is not connected to consumption once one reaches a minimum threshold for survival and comfort. In fact, the Happy Planet Index, and yes, there is such an index, has found that happiness scores in the United States, China, and India have declined in recent years. Costa Rica was found to be the happiest place on the planet per acre of resources used. The pressures to consume at home and worldwide are immense. It takes a strong person with strong community to begin to withstand the pressures coming at each of us many times each day to consume. What can we do? I don't recommend feeling guilty. I don't believe that guilt solves issues. The pressures are great for us to consume. Be compassionate with yourself. I do recommend working within your means and interests to change our culture. Again, there is much to be done in the public policy arena to change our culture of consumption. A ban on outdoor ads, such as enacted in Sao Paulo, Brazil, would be one start. I read recently that there is a move afoot in some Western states to limit or ban billboards. Official statistics on economic growth do not reflect the perceptions of individuals regarding their quality of life. Incorporating some measure of quality of life into the economic statistics we banter about in the news daily would help shift that discussion. And finally, I think there is a major role for our congregation, for you, and our faith in reducing consumption. I'm not just talking about the social activism many of you do so well. I'm talking about the religious community that we foster here. Much of what we purchase is supposed to fill a void. We buy into advertising that tells us if we purchase this cosmetic or that piece of clothing, we will meet the person of our dreams and we will be happy. If we own that smartphone, that cool little piece of technology will enable us to listen to all our music, text with all our friends, find our way, how did Lewis and Clark do it, and be happy. Isn't that the root of all advertising? The premise that with this particular purchase, you will be happy. But what if we are already feeling fulfilled? Filled by connections with this community, filled by spiritual life, filled by the meaning our social justice work brings, filled by making music with friends for worship. Fulfillment isn't a perfect antidote to consumerism. The advertisers are very, very good at what they do, but it sure helps. And this, my friends, is how I offer that we can help save the world by doing what we can do one step at a time. Amen. Let us sing now together Blue Boat Home. It's on the insert in your order of service. And you may stand in body or spirit.